Okay. This interview is being conducted with Alvin J. Cole by Logan Cole over the phone on November 2nd, 2008. Could you go ahead and give us some background, biographical information, where you were born, where you grew up, basically until your enlistment?
I was born in 1948 in Salina, Kansas. My father was in the military. So by the time I graduated from college, we had gone to like 43 different schools. I ended up in Hawaii where I enlisted for the Army in 1967. Had a lot of exposure to a lot of different people while growing up.
Okay, what was your draft number?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember because I volunteered in 1967, but I did have a draft card. Because we're talking about how many years? 40-some years ago?
Yeah.
I have a good memory, but not that good.
Well, my dad mentioned you had a draft number and told me to ask you about that and if it made a difference on whether you enlisted or not.
No, it didn't make a single bit of difference. I grew up in a conservative military background and took ROTC and Civil Air Patrol watched a lot of John Wayne movies, so I guess you could say I was kind of brainwashed and decided to serve my country.
Right.
And I had nothing against the Vietnamese or anything. Since growing up in Hawaii, they were Asians were in the majority. I was a minority.
Really?
Yeah. Just look at the demographics of Hawaii.
Huh.
Yeah, Japanese, the Chinese, the Vietnamese, the Filipinos, and a number of other Asian countries went and came in for labor in the sugarcane fields, the pineapple fields, and just stayed.
Huh. So, did your family history play a role in your decision to join?
Well, it was a military family, and always been in a military community, so I guess in part it did, yeah.
Okay, so why exactly did you enlist then?
Why did I?
Yes.
I guess I just wanted to see what was going on, and talked to a few people, both pros and cons, and just went, signed the paper, and went in.
How did your family think about the war and your participation?
They advised caution, but, you know, being a snotty 18-year-old who knew it all, I was going to do my thing anyway.
Oh.
I was old enough to do it.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say that. I think we all go through that.
Yeah. So, what was your attitude towards the war before you served?
Before I served, really didn't have too much of either for or against. You know, it was something happening in the media, and when you're in high school and all that, it's kind of like in the background, and you have a lot of other activities going on: football, dating, proms, classwork, etc. And really didn't get into it till the pros and the cons of it till after I got involved in it and then got out.
Okay, so how has your attitude changed?
By now, in hindsight, I wouldn't have gone in. I had relatives in Toronto that I could have gone to if I wanted to. It's just, you know, we should never have gotten involved in Vietnam. It's a civil war. You can never win. Just like certain current wars, which we won't go into since the interview isn't about that.
Yeah, we can go into that later. Where did you go for boot camp?
I got into the Army in Hawaii, and I went to Fort Ord, California, where a lot of the Hawaiians, Alaskans, and other people came for basic training. And it was a big mix of people, all sorts of different people. Off the top of my head, I remembered talking to or serving with some people that were elephant cleaners in the Cleveland Zoo, taxi drivers up in Oregon, a bunch of other different people.
Hmm. Where did you go for your advanced training?
Advanced training, or AIT, I went at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and artillery.
So did the Army give you the training you wanted?
No. When I signed up, I thought I was signing up for missiles. And I found out later I had signed up for field artillery, since they were in the process of looking, I guess, for cannon fodder, and had a big need for it. They weren't too, shall we say, ethically inclined when it came to signing up people. They just needed bodies.
Huh.
But, you know, once you sign and say, I do, you're stuck. So, yeah, I went to the training. But I learned to read the fine print after that.
Could you describe your training for us?
Which one?
I guess
we're talking basic, AIT, or getting ready to go to Vietnam.
I guess getting ready to go to Vietnam.
Okay, I went from Fort Sill, Oklahoma, to Fort Carson, Colorado, and we were put in World War II barracks that should have been torn down 20 years. And drafty, they were heated by coal furnaces. Practicing to go to Vietnam, we were up over a mile, and from the fall into winter, and it was rather difficult to get ready for the jungles when you've got 4 feet of snow on the ground, blizzards happening, and you're freezing your tush off there. So we got, shall we say, training on the different weapons and the different vehicles, etc., but it really didn't prepare us for jungle combat.
So the training was not adequate?
Not to go into a jungle. When you're in high mountain country and you're training for a country like Vietnam, which is jungle, you're not ready.
What was your daily routine like in training?
Eat, get up, physical training, police the area. Go, depending upon what you your job was, go and do your job. Maintenance on the vehicles, depending, you may have had a combat exercise go out to. Maintenance on the trucks, on the, I was in a 105 howitzer company, maintenance on the guns, practice shooting it. Unless you had night duty or whatever, you usually go off at 5. I had an additional duty of being a fireman, which in my particular case meant to stoke the coal-fired furnace in hot water. And you had to do that overnight, and when you got through, my entire face and uniform was covered in coal dust.
Did you end up going into combat with the men you trained with?
Yeah. Because for about 6 months, all of us were in the same unit, getting, I guess, used to each other and getting to know one another and the equipment and all that. And we also, in, our unit went over to Vietnam with all of its equipment. So we were in a troop ship with 5,000 other people, 23 days.
So did that make...
go ahead.
I was going to ask, did that make a difference to you whatsoever?
Well, you know who you could depend on, and who were good and who were bad. And once you get into a situation like Vietnam, that's the only thing you can really trust.
Hmm. Okay, so what unit were you assigned to?
It became part of the 1st Air Cav. We were a subunit of the field artillery of the 1st Air Cav. Off the top of my head, I don't remember the specific designation of the unit. I tried to look it up, but I don't have any papers in that regard.
Do you remember what your specific position was in your unit?
Are you talking about the job I performed?
Yes.
I was on the gunnery crew when our gun got damaged. I became what's called a floater. I did what was needed. I was a perimeter guard. I drove ammunition runs, and I was a shotgun on the ammunition runs. Because, you know, if you don't have a gun to do, they have needs for other things. And occasionally, get casualties, and they need to still have the job done, need the guns, pick up supplies, and that kind of stuff.
What years did you serve in?
Are we talking Southeast Asia?
Yes.
1968 and part of 1969.
What engagements or campaigns did you participate in Southeast Asia?
When we arrived in Vietnam, it was in the middle of the Tet Offensive, and also we helped support Khe Sanh. And besides that, it was a lot of nameless hills in the middle of nowhere, which we were we did a lot of fire support for other people like the infantry and the Marines, that kind of thing.
Could you describe your experience in the Tet Offensive?
We basically unloaded our equipment in Da Nang, stayed there where we got everything together. That's probably the first time I came under attack, and that was with 122-millimeter rockets. And then we would proceed to go from point A to B in a convoy with Dusanaf, which is a 2.5-ton truck with people, and towing the gun. And every week or so, we would proceed to go to another place, just because wherever we were needed. And I went as far north as the DMZ.
Okay, could you describe your experience in Khe
Sanh? We were on a fire support base. We were firing high explosives, white phosphorus, smoke, to support the people in Khe Sanh. Because that was our duty as an artillery unit, to provide support fire and harassment and interdiction, which we would randomly shoot around the area just to keep the enemy down.
Did you like the artillery in general?
Did I like the artillery? Yeah. It was my job. Vietnam, hot, sweaty, you didn't have a bath, sea rations, large bugs, and people were trying to kill you. So, also, there was, unless you were careful, you could lose your hearing just because of the loud sounds.
If you could have chosen, what unit would you have served in?
If I could have chosen, what unit would I have served in? I probably would like to have been into tactical missiles.
Why?
Just that's an interest, I guess, from Star Trek or whatever, the high technology, sense of just wanting to be on the cutting edge. And field artillery is kind of low tech. Pick the shell in, pull the lanyard, and it goes off. And with at least missiles, you had a lot of preparation, math, that kind of good stuff.
So during your service, why exactly did you think the U.S. was in Vietnam?
When I first entered, I didn't know. I wasn't too well aware of the various reasons. You read the newspapers of the time, watch the TV, and a lot of it was Cold War propaganda. So you really did not know what was going on, and most people didn't until later when all the TV reporting started bringing the reality home, which didn't help me since I was in the middle of what was going on. And when you're in Vietnam, you never knew what was going on. Nobody told you anything. And, time to time you'd hear rumors, but while you were in country, your world kind of shrank to your unit.
Okay. This is a question Connor wanted to know, but did you fight with any other soldiers from another branch?
Oh, we were intermixed with Marines, and we fought with other countries' soldiers, too, with the Aussies, Koreans, I think some Turks once upon a time. And we supported all branches of the service. In fact, we supported rescue fires by laying suppressing fire down.
Is that any different than serving with men of your own branch?
No, we coordinated with them. We did not intermingle just because it was, it's a different objective.
Okay.
We were the field artillery. We had certain specific things that, we could do. We weren't infantry. We didn't go out beating the rice paddies for the Viet Cong, and the closest we ever got to that was doing perimeter duty, where you basically manned a bunker and you watched the perimeter in case of attack.
How were you treated by the government overseas?
By the government? Are you talking the South Vietnamese?
No, by the U.S.
As soldiers, basically. For most of us, it was our officers. And they were in the same boat as we were. They were just trying to do their job and survive and go home.
Okay, what was your initial impression of Vietnam upon arrival?
Well, we landed at a big port and went to a small landing craft to go to a shore. And as I mentioned earlier, about 12 hours after that, we got attacked. Or I should say the base got attacked, and a few rockets blew up things. So that kind of brought the point out, there are people trying to kill you. So that kind of colored your outlook from then on. Be as cautious as possible.
What were the conditions like in Vietnam?
Very primitive. Unless you were in places like Saigon, the majority of places, the best you could hope for would be a sandbag bunker with a secure roof, damp, smelling rats, insects, sea rations for food. If you wanted a bath, basically you took it out of your helmet. You went, got water, and kind of did a towel or whatever, just try to keep yourself as clean as possible. A lot of people got fungal infections on their feet, just because it was so damp. You couldn't really keep yourself too clean.
So, how was the food and water?
Sea rations. And the water basically had a high chlorine content just to kill anything that was in there. And a lot of these sea rations were fairly entirely edible. And I always remember that even the rats wouldn't eat the canned bread.
Huh.
I mean, it was, I'm not sure what they made it, but it had a chemical taste and couldn't stomach it.
How did the locals treat you?
We had very little interaction with locals because we were moving from base to base. And the only interaction I would have is, you know, I'd occasionally glance at them, and that's when you notice that a lot of them were counting how many trucks and everything we had, so they would pass it on to the NVA, so they knew how many equipment and soldiers and guns there were. And the only other thing is occasional civilian workers that would be contracted to do some of the work on the basis that soldiers just didn't have time to do or didn't have the skill to do. But besides that, not too much.
Okay. How did you and your fellow soldiers treat each other?
The closest I could come to would be like frat boys. You know, you're a unit, you're young, you're in danger, you're same experience, same hardships. So it's closest is like a good type of fraternity.
Hmm. Okay, so did your unit have a lot of cohesion? How was the morale in your unit?
It depended, on what had gone on. Sometimes it was high, sometimes it was low. If people had got killed, and the morale plunged for a while. And, it just depended on what happened during the day.
How was the morale, overall of the Army during the war?
All that kind of stuff, I'm sure your morale was high. Initially, I would say it was fairly good, and then it just started going downhill as, more casualties and more negative, public relations exposure in the media. And it didn't help about Martin Luther King got killed. Still a lot of, in certain respects, racial overtones at that time.
How was the leadership in your unit?
For the most part, fairly good. There was some incompetence, but they were marginalized and put in places that didn't do too much harm.
Okay, so earlier you said that you rode shotgun for resupplying ammunition and stuff?
That's right.
Could you describe your experiences doing that?
What resupply is, you take an empty truck, you may go, depending on how far the ammunition dump is, it may take up to a day. You fill your truck with artillery shells, and then you drive back. From time to time, you would be mortared. If you're lucky, they were a lousy shot. If you were not lucky, you didn't live too long. Because if the mortar hits into what you're carrying, the entire truck goes away.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I saw it happen once.
Okay, was there any racial discrimination present?
Not within the unit. I'm sure that in the army there probably was at that time. But, within our unit, just because, we were just trying to survive, we didn't have any.
Okay, so you said you didn't have that much interaction with the locals, but what was your opinion of the locals?
As I mentioned, I grew up in Hawaii, so I had nothing against Asians. And, I had limited exposure, so I really didn't have that much of an opinion either for or against.
Okay, could you describe your daily routine while in country? During the war, do you think you were accurately informed to the bigger picture of what was going on?
No. While in country, we had very little idea what was going on, because the only outside media that we had was the Armed Services radio. And, of course, they're going to give you the military's point of view. No newspapers, no other television, no other radio. Occasionally you could pick up the propaganda broadcast from Honora Rose, or whatever her name was at that time. But besides that, no, we weren't informed.
Okay, what was your favorite weapon and why?
What was my favorite weapon and why? I carried a 45 caliber pistol, an M79 grenade launcher, and didn't carry an M16 because I was assigned the M79. I guess that because it was my weapon, I get the M79. Could do a lot of damage at a fairly good distance. And the 45 was good for really close distance.
Okay. So you said when you first came off the boat, that was pretty much your first combat experience?
Well, about 12 hours after we got out, when we got into tents, and that night they attacked, yeah, that was my first experience.
Could you describe that a little bit more?
Explosion nearby, trying to get your senses and find a place to hide, and hoping that nothing happened to you.
Okay, what were your rules of engagement?
Rules of engagement. What were the rules of engagement? As far as I know, there weren't any, in terms of normally where we were at, because they had cleared, we were usually on a hill, and they had cleared down to, I forgot what the distance was, and there were no civilians. Anybody in that area was automatically assumed to be an enemy, to be dealt with accordingly.
Did you ever have any confirmed kills?
Did I have any confirmed kills? I believe I've killed a couple people, just basically when there was attack on the perimeter. And we basically were freezes, and somebody gets hit with the M79, there aren't too many pieces left whole.
How did that affect you?
I wasn't proud of it. You know, here's another human being that was probably doing his job like I was trying to, and it's just part of the job.
Did your unit have incentives for
No. Well, we weren't that kind of unit.
Okay.
You're talking about for body count?
Yes.
Yeah, we weren't that kind of unit. Well, when an artillery shell hits a grouping, there isn't that much left to count. And you're talking, we know, we shoot like 5 or 6 miles away, so it's not our mission.
Okay. What did you remember the most about combat?
Large amounts of boredom in airspace with terrifying seconds. Because, you know, you prepare, you know, you look out, you hear things, and it's nothing. And then suddenly, it's something. And you glance into the... Because normally it would happen after dark, so you'd be staring out there trying to make out, see if there's anything there. Occasionally a flare would be shot and float down. And then, for maybe weeks, nothing, then suddenly all hell would break out. And you were trained good enough that you went automatic into what you've been trained. And you did your job.
Yeah. What was your opinion of the enemy?
The opinion of the enemy... I really had no personal animosity toward them because, besides the fact they were trying to kill me and vice versa, but you know, besides that, not really. I guess because of my growing up in Hawaii, there are good Asians and bad Asians, so you don't, at least in my perspective, all of them together. And, you know, some of the people got, shall we say, a little warped because of the situation and, you know, called them gooks and that kind of thing. Personally, I never did.
Okay, could you describe your most memorable moment in Vietnam?
My most memorable moment in Vietnam?
Yes.
Probably when my bunker mate set up a booby trap, and I remember one big flash, and woke up in what amounted to a MASH hospital. I had both legs with shrapnel in them, and my bunker mate had lost his right leg. So, you know, almost getting killed is probably my most memorable moment.
Okay. What was the hardest part about being in Vietnam?
The hardest part about being in Vietnam, people trying to kill you. Being in a situation where all your movements were restricted by being a soldier, and also just you never knew what was going to happen out there. Always alert to what may happen. I guess you'd say the stress level.
Okay, could you describe a little bit more of the time when you were wounded?
Well, as I said, there was a big blinding flash. I vaguely remember something like a cloud of dirt and everything just rising up, and then I blacked out. I came to in the hospital, and they could not treat me as such, so I was medevaced to Okinawa, where I spent 90 days in the hospital.
How was the quality of your treatment there?
You're talking medical?
Yes.
I would say it was equivalent to anything that the civilians had at that time. And they treated you as best they could. And they had probably some of the best facilities available at that time. And I have nothing but praise for the doctors and nurses. They had a rough job because of, you know, all the casualties.
Yeah, how was your personal treatment over there?
Are you talking about while in the hospital?
Yes.
I was, you know, treated with, I would say, I respect, and they tried to do what they could for me. There was, you know, no mistreatment.
Okay, what medals did you receive?
Got two Purple Hearts, Good Conduct, the Vietnam Service Medal, National Defense, that kind of stuff.
How did you receive your other Purple Heart? So did you have any encounters with the wildlife in Vietnam at all?
No. Well, if you consider scorpions as foot-long, rats, that kind of thing, yes. Otherwise, I'd occasionally see water buffalo in the distance, but besides that, no. No tigers or anything like that. Because we were up north, and we were usually on a hillside.
Okay, what did you do for recreation during the war? Yes.
There was no recreation as such. Besides, you played cards, yes. That was about it. There were no facilities. And, you know, you could take your R&R eventually. But, you know, that's like 6 months, 9 months. But while in country, unless you had R&R, there weren't that many facilities, because you were in the field.
Okay, what did you think about most of the time while in country?
What did I think about mostly?
Yes.
You thought about home, of course. You tried not to think about the fear, which was always with you, just because of the situation. And just doing your job.
Okay, how exactly did you comfort yourself? Like, did you listen to a certain song or read something?
Well, I had some books to read, listen to whatever music I could, and just talk to my fellow soldiers. It was about it. You know, we shared our triumphs and our fears. Just, you know, try to help each other through.
Okay, do you ever enjoy yourself while in Vietnam?
No, not really. Because, just because of the nature. You were in the middle of nowhere. There are people trying to kill you, and, occasionally, if you're lucky, they do a beer run. And I guess the closest comfort was warm beer.
Okay, what was the, or do you know what the overall strategy that the Army used during the war was?
When I was in the middle of it, no. You only find that out if you, you know, one look after when you come back.
Okay. Was there anyone in the war that significantly affected your life?
Anyone in the war? No. Because a lot of the people I knew either disappeared or died. And never able to catch up with any of the people in the unit.
How did you get through the war?
One day at a time, while you can. You don't look too far ahead.
Did you ever witness anything good come out of the war?
Anything good out of the war? No, because it was our job to, try to keep the country for our allies. So, my job in the field artillery was not to build things up, but to blow them up.
When did you end up coming back home to the United States?
I came back in 1969, May, I believe.
Why was your service up or what?
No, I was rotated back to the United States from Okinawa, where I went to Fort Hood, Texas.
What did you do when you were there?
I had switched from being field artillery to supply, and basically finished my service as a supply sergeant.
What exactly did that entail?
Well, you take care of all the supplies that the unit needs. In my particular case, it was an administrative company that I went to. So we made sure everybody had their necessary stuff for their uniforms, office supplies, paper, whatever was needed.
Okay, what did you think about your experiences in Vietnam after coming home?
My experiences from Vietnam, not very positive because the anti-war movement was at its height, and being a soldier was not too popular of a thing to be at that time, and they took every advantage of it to press home their point.
So, did any of the protests affect you at all?
Affect me? I tried to stay as far away as possible from protests because I had enough of conflict and violence and all that, just trying to get my head back together after coming back and try to get a normal life as much as I could.
Okay, so in general, how did you feel about the U.S. involvement in Vietnam? Yes.
Big mistake. We should not have been there. We should have learned from the French. Had them been through back in 1954. We had no business being there. And the military was held back. Politicians got involved, so we basically lost the war. And then abandoned a lot of our allies who'd fought with us. And then for 10 years, chaos in Vietnam.
So, do you think the war was justified at all?
No. Just like the war in Iraq today, it's not justified. And I was hoping my generation would have been the last of its kind to go through such a war, but was not to be.
Okay, could you describe the transition of going back to the civilian life?
Describe the transition. Anybody that's ever been to Vietnam never comes back completely whole. And if you're lucky, you can halfway put your life back together. And you have good periods and you have bad periods. Best thing that can happen is you get people had a similar experience and do a support group. Some people didn't weren't able to do that and either committed suicide or became mentally unstable. But I was able to not do that.
Thank God.
Yeah.
So could you describe, I guess, your post-war life from when you got back to now?
much of the negative experience, the I guess military training that involved Vietnam, and try to just blend in. I had no desire to talk to people about my experiences, because unless you've been there, they really wouldn't understand. Other vets might, but unless they're Vietnam vets, not totally. And then it was a matter of going to school, trying to get back into a, I guess you'd call it a civilian routine. I went to college, got 3 master's degrees, worked for the Veterans Administration, worked for the Civil Service, the Air Force, worked for Bell Helicopter International in Iran, ran nursing homes, and I even ran a health services of a state maximum security prison. And between that, met my wife, married her, and we had a semi-normal daughter called Barbara. And I think I've become as about as well adjusted as I could under the circumstances.
All right. So, how were you treated upon arrival of getting back home after the war?
Not very good when I first came, and then when I went to college, I basically blended in and didn't make any statements or anything, and just did my schoolwork. And then wasn't bothered too much after that.
Okay, so in your opinion, how exactly did the media distort the war?
They were trying to get ratings. They distorted by only picturing part of it. Of course, the government didn't help by putting out a lot of misinformation, their own propaganda. A couple times they got caught. And they made no effort, I think, really to deal effectively with the media. So the negative was picked up by various groups here in the state and just helped the anti-war movement.
Okay, did you ever keep in touch with anyone that you served with?
I never ran into them again.
So did you ever, like, try to, or?
Not really. Just, ended up moving around a lot, so just never had the opportunity, I guess.
So did you ever participate in any veterans organizations?
Not really. The only veterans organization I participated in was the Veterans Administration, which I work for. I worked for, I should say.
So why didn't you participate in any?
Just didn't feel if I would fit in. That's why.
Okay, have you ever sat down with a former PAVN or VC?
Not really. Never had the opportunity. I would have no hesitation to do that. They were doing their job, we were doing ours. And all of us have gotten old.
In your opinion, why do you think the U.S. lost the war?
Can you repeat that?
In your opinion, why do you think the U.S. lost the war?
The situation, and we did not have the political will to win. We didn't have the patience. And
Uncle Jim. Can you hear me?
No.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Okay, gotcha. Thought I lost you for a second.
Now, yeah, I heard you rustling your papers. I thought you were looking at the next question.
Okay. My dad told me that you gave him one of your purple hearts. Is that correct?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh. Okay. Well.
He may have your glass.
Oh. Okay. Well, never mind then. Why exactly do you think you survived the war?
Sheer luck. Just a roll of the dice, because I could have easily been a name on the wall in D.C. Just a, it wasn't my time to go.
Okay, on that questionnaire that you filled out, you mentioned that Vietnam strengthened your religious beliefs. So how exactly did that strengthen your beliefs? Just like you said?
Well, they just made me more sure that there is something beyond this, and there is a universal, I guess, set of ethics that it's up to us to find and follow.
Okay. Did you learn anything from the war at all? What major lessons should America learn from Vietnam?
We haven't learned them yet, as shown by the current administration. Afghanistan was necessary just to take care of the people that did it, but Iraq was a similar situation to Vietnam. And we're going to be in there for years to come, and just lots of body bags are going to come out of it. And we will have spent hundreds of billions of dollars for nothing.
Okay, did you ever visit the Vietnam War?
Yes, I did. And it was a very moving experience each time I visit.
Would you mind maybe describing what that was like at all?
Well, when you just go and suddenly you see all these names. In my particular case, it was kind of like a sadness because some of the names I'm familiar with. And those are people that will never be here again. And just the sheer waste of it, all those names were nothing. So I guess a little anger, too. Sadness and anger.
Okay. Have you ever gone back to Vietnam?
I tried to, but I couldn't get a visa. Just because we're trying to start a medical tourism company, and I was on the places we wanted to go. And it just didn't work out. And I would have no hesitation about going back.
So you would like to go back?
Yeah, I mean, even when there, drive along the highway into the mountains, you could see some really beautiful beaches that I would say are equivalent to anything in the world that's out there.
So, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, why exactly would you like to go back to Vietnam?
It's a lovely country, and the people are friendly. And now that we aren't enemies. They're trying to develop their tourist industry. They're trying to develop business. So, they're very approachable people.
Yeah, have you ever experienced any complications or anything because of your injury?
Are we talking mental or physically?
Both.
Well, I'm still picking out pieces of shrapnel, etc. 40 years later. I ended up in the hospital. They took out about 20 pounds of muscle and meat from one of my legs. I ended up being getting a disability from the VA. And I have a callus, basically, that never goes away, and I get a little pain to remind me each time I take a step what happened. Mentally, it was rough in the beginning, but I've got it under control.
How do you think the U.S. treats its veterans today?
Well, an example is Walter Reed Hospital that took media exposure to get them to try to treat them right. They, this exposure is going to have them treated right for a while, but the Veterans Administration just has a history of backsliding from time to time. And it's a matter of just the veterans sticking up for themselves and making sure they get the treatment they deserve.
Okay, how were you affected the most because of the war?
I would say a general cynicism and a lack of trust in our leaders. Just because time after time they've shown they aren't trustworthy or worthy of our allegiance to them. So I guess the overall thing would be a big degree of cynicism.
Yeah, that's reasonably understandable, though.
Yeah.
So as you stated earlier, you think Iraq is unjustified, but Afghanistan was?
We had to retaliate against the people that took down the World Trade Center. We had no choice. In the Middle East, unless you show strength, they're going to think you're weak and they're going to come back. So Afghanistan, we had no choice. Iraq, that was completely ego. And we should never have gone in. All the made-up reasons, the weapons of mass destruction, Al-Qaeda and all that, all made up.
Okay, well, that pretty much concludes the interview. Is there anything else you'd like to comment on?
Not really. I think I covered about it all.
Gotcha. Okay.